Fine. Okay, so the first sugya on Masechet Shviit, Masechet Shviit, adding to Shemitah, the prohibitions, right? So, Shemitah, as you guys know, began Rosh Hashanah. However, and will end the coming Rosh Hashanah, but the prohibitions, as the Mishnah tells you, begin before and end after, right? The Yisurim extend outwards, and that's called Masechet Shviit, adding to Shviit. This is the first sugya in the Mishnah, and therefore the first sugya in the Yerushalmi. It is also dealt with extensively in the Bavli. I've decided that we're going to learn Bavli first. Reb Ginsburg decided to do Yerushalmi first because, as he said, I am more sadistic, which is not usually true. Usually I'm more sadistic. But we're going to start with the Bavli. But be warned, this is a hard sugya. Okay? This is, before Rosh Hashanah, nice, light sugya. This sugya is not nice and light. It's very nice. It's not light. And the Bavli is one thing. Yerushalmi, I don't know what to tell you. This season, Yerushalmi, look, I started learning Yerushalmi Shviat Ve'iyun with a Chavrusa Pesach sign. That sugya alone, I don't know, maybe took us 2 months. We learn once a week, usually. It's not like whatever. But my Chavrusa, who has not learned Yerushalmi as much as me, after like a week or two of learning, he's like, aha. So learning the Yerushalmi is trying to play three-dimensional chess upside down underwater. I'm like, I don't know if I identify with that mashal, but it's not always easy. And this particular piece is, it's going to be fun, okay? It's going to be fun. If you have my sense of fun. Yay. Okay. Fine. But let's start. Mishnah, okay? Someone tell me, what does the Mishnah tell you? I told you to look at the Mishnah first, which obviously you could just look at Yerushalmi. And again, do not feel bad about using the art scroll. Please don't. The footnotes are unbelievable. The chilufei gersot are critical. I do want you to learn how to read Yerushalmi, but I would also like you to take advantage of the resources that the art scroll has, and don't be afraid to use it in Bavli. But okay, Mishnah. What does the first Mishnah in Shmi tell us? Right? At Eim Atzai Chorfin B'Stei Ha'ilan Erev Shmi. What does that name?
When you
Very good. I'm glad you didn't forget your English. Right? A Stei Ilan is an orchard in English, or right? Not a tree field. But yes, an orchard. So when do you plow orchards and fields? Before Shviit. So what do we have? The Shammai says?
As long as it'll be good for the pre.
Good. Why? Right? As long as the working in the field is good, is beneficial to the fruit, as opposed to what?
The
land. Very good. Right? The land. Why not? Right? Right? No. Right? Vishavta ha'aret. Right? The land. Right, as we'll see, the land is more important to rest, right? But here it's a little bit more than that. It's because the fruit, what halachic status does the fruit have? Is it Shemitah? Is it Shviat? No. Right now, if you go and you pick a fruit off most trees, is it Shemitah? Kedusha Shviat? No. Right? If you've gone to, how many of you have gone to a supermarket since Rosh Hashanah? Okay. So, depending on where you go, there will be a sign telling you what the supermarket is doing for Shemitah, right? So, you might have seen Yevul Nachri, you might have seen Shishit, you might have seen Heter Mechira, you might have seen Otsar Besin, you might have seen Matzah Menutach, you might have seen Droma Rava, right? All types of things, which we'll talk about in the year what you've seen. But, on many things, where everyone agrees on the halachic status, you will have seen Shishit. What does shishit mean? 6 years. So, in the case of onions, or sweet potatoes, or avocados, which, as far as I've seen, are still shishit, why are they shishit? No, because they've been stored. They've been in storage. Because vegetables are defined halakhically, bishat l'kita, based on when you pick them. But fruits are defined bishat chanita, right? Right? When they start blossoming. And therefore, even a fruit, most fruit that are on the tree now that are ripe, even if you pick them now during Shemitah, they still have the halachic status of shishit. right? And they will until, it'll be a few months, probably Hanukkah time, you'll start seeing fruit that are not, that are, that might be subject to machlokes, right? But right now you won't see it at all, they're all shishi, okay? Fruit leaves a growing tree, right? Meaning halachic fruit, not, right? Ha'ik fruit, not scientific fruit, right? Tomatoes, obviously, which are, as you know, scientifically fruits, right? Halachically are not, right? Halachically are vegetables, and therefore b'shach l'chita. So fruit or shishi. So Beit Shammai says, listen, if you want to do work on the fruit, that's totally mutter, because yafeh lepri, and the pri is not kedusha shvi. This is the sixth year, and they're, right, and they are big kedusha, right? They're not big kedusha in anything. They are shishi, right? But at which point the fruit don't need work anymore. So if you're working the tree, what are you really doing? You're working the field. And if you're working the field, you're preparing it for shvi. And that's a problem. That's what Beit Shammai says. Okay? What does the hill say? Right, which he calls Aseret, which, right, which we call Shavuos. Okay? Very good. So, hold it 1 second. Let's read the last line of the Mishnah, and then I'll come back to you in 1 second, okay? And how does the Mishnah end? Ukrovim divrei elu lishyot ki divrei elu. What does that mean? They're pretty much the same. Right, they're pretty much the same. Good. Now, before I take Moshe's question, it's a very good question, but I'm going to ask you a question first, which is a leading question, right, which I asked to Mordechai and Eli already yesterday, which is, okay, what is the Mishnah doing? Right, the Mishnah tells you, listen, until what point can you work in an orchard on year six? The Shammai says, as long as it's still good for the fruit, implying not good for the land. The Hill says, Shavuot, that's it, right? Shavuot. And then the Mishnah comes and says, and by the way, they're basically the same. Okay, so what? What does that force you to ask, right? When the Mishnah comes and has this very surprising statement, Krovim Elu, Liyav Kedivre Elu, what does that tell you? What do you have to ask yourself immediately? Or what are they arguing? Like, meaning, if they're basically saying the same thing, then what are they arguing about? Good. Very good. So now, you tell me, conceptually, what are the possibilities? So one answer is pragmatic, right? One answer is what Josh is saying. Listen, Mishnah isn't telling you anything. It's just telling you, listen, there's a few days difference, Yacholiyos, right? It could be a little bit of a difference. Just know that. But most of the time, they're in agreement. I mean, they practically, they are in disagreement, right? By much, no, right? But are there cases in which they'll practically dispute? Yeah, right? Could be, right? So one way of being the Mishnah is purely pragmatic, right? Which is, they have totally different principles. They happen to practically overlap, right? So you should know that. But they don't always. Okay? Good. That's one way of reading it. What else? How else? What else might the Mishnah want to do? Right. The other way to go is to say, no. The reason the Mishnah makes a big deal of this is because it may be that practically they usually overlap, but that's an accident. Right? Conceptually, right? They come at it completely differently. It happens to me they normally overlap. But don't be tricked into thinking they're saying the same thing. They're really not. Right? Conceptually, they have two fundamentally different visions of what the Zevet Shviyit is. It just happens to be that they normally overlap. Right? Right? They normally overlap. Right? But that's an accident. Right? And then, right, in the first model, so in the first model, then you might think what? Now I'm going to push Josh more. Okay, in the first model, if you think that what they're telling you is practically, they're almost the same. So then, what type of rationale would you look for the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? Right, I mean, if you think that what the Mishnah is telling you is they're basically the same thing, but sometimes a little bit different, but then Chol Yisrael is the same, right? So what type of machloket might you look for? In the first model.
Yeah, and,
okay, Moshe is already...
What they do for the few days difference.
What? Meaning... Right, meaning what? Okay, let's start with the second one, right? So obviously with the second explanation, if you think that the Mishnah is telling you is, look, practically these are similar, right? But that's by accident, right? Right? So then you might say, okay, what we're looking for is a fundamental difference in conceptualization, right? Fine. But sometimes, that's not how things work. Sometimes, right? Sometimes machloket aren't in different models. They are machloket of degree, right? Or for the Rambam guys, if Rabbi Har is still doing what he did when I was there, then he would tell you, is it a qualitative machloket or a quantitative machloket, right? Meaning, if, right? Did he still do that?
I think he did
one. Okay, fine. If he doesn't, it's a pretty easy way of saying it in English, right? Which is, you could say, look, these are fundamentally different, right? He holds model A, he holds model B. They happen to overlap, but conceptually, right? The other way to say it is, no, when they say krovim, right, krovim divrei elu, yok divrei elu, they're not just saying that they happen to overlap. What it might be, they don't really disagree much, meaning they have a slight difference. What's the slight difference? I don't know, right? We could see, but it could be something like, listen, both Behil and Beit Shammai say the real principle is yafel lepri versus yafel lekarka. But Beit Shammai thinks you should try to figure out on a case-by-case basis, and Behil says, for whatever reason, we just objectify it. And we say, listen, usually Shavuot is the cutoff point, so Bein Lekula, Bein Lechomer, we're just going to pick an arbitrary date that captures that idea. Right? And then their machloket isn't fundamental. What their machloket is within the rubric of trying to figure out what's good for the fruit versus what's good for the field, do we pick an arbitrary date that captures 95% of the cases, or do we try to, right? And to be fair, it's very hard to figure out, right? Meaning, look, the halacha in general, as we'll see in Shemitah, is that what type of work are you allowed to do on trees? Yes, right? What we'll see, which is going to be very important, so here's what's called le'ukme versus le'evruye, right? To keep it alive, right? Like Hakim, right? To keep it sustained versus le'evruye to make it healthier. Now, what's the difference? How do you know when you're doing one and when you're doing the other? So if you're a farmer, maybe you know. If you're me, you know, a precocious, I can keep my geraniums alive, right? I have no, like, right? Because you look online, they say, don't water them less than this, but don't water them more. If you water them too much, they'll drown. If you water them too little, they'll dry out. I'm like, thank you. You're very helpful to the, right? But most people don't know, right? So what did I do? I asked a shayla. I didn't ask shayla from a rabbi, right? I have a neighbor who's a botanist. And I said, a botanist, you know? A flower guy, a flower scientist, a plant scientist, right? And I said to him, okay, I know the halakhic principles. Please tell me the things in my garden. What does this mean? What will keep it alive and what will make it healthier? I literally have no idea. And he tells me, right? But it could be that he always does. Well, not everyone has a neighbor who's a botanist, right? Like, botanists do things I could never do. Like, he walked in, I have a friend who's next door neighbors with his botanist, who has a bunch of lemon trees in his backyard, which are Arla. Okay, what's Arla? Morning, Cubby. What? Plus, it's right within the first 3 years. And what's the halacha of Arla? You cannot eat it. Very good. Now, what's the problem if a tree is Arla during Shemitah?
Other people don't know that it's Arla.
Very good. Other people don't know what to do, right? Because they're allowed to come in and take it, not yet because the fruit, but in a few months. Right? But it's Arla, so it's Usher. So how do you let people know that it's Arla? So when I remember when I was in Alon Shvut, when I was in Yeshiva many, many years ago, it was Shemitah, my Shana Bet, and Rabbi Bednar was very frustrated. He's one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU Israel. And he said, Leora insists that they put up a sign on our lemon tree that it is Arla. And I told her, we shouldn't put a sign. We should do what the Mishnah says. What does the Mishnah say? You take broken pieces of pottery shard and you throw it around the tree. And everybody will know that that is the universal sign that it's Arla. And Leora said, well, yes, but not everybody knows the Mishnah. See, like no one here knew that Mishnah. But But remember I said that fruits, right, have different standards, right, of when they become shviyit, right? So lemons, citrus are yet more exceptional in different ways, right? So in terms of, so the botanist neighbor walked in to his lemon tree and said, you really just got to cut it down because people are going to come and eat it. But if something isn't mature yet, right, isn't even, you know, at all mature, right, so then it'll be counted for next year, so it'll be mutter. Right, the fruits. No, the lemons. Like cut off the lemons so people don't eat it. Not the lemon tree, the lemon. Right? No, he looked at the fruit and he said, okay, this fruit has grown too much already. Right? Because he could look at it and say, this has been 10% grown, 20% grown. Right? And he knew, right, I don't know this. Right? So it could be to be held, it says, the average person doesn't know, so we pick up an arbitrary date. Now, whether you can pick an arbitrary date might depend on is it d'oraita, is it d'rabbanan, on things like that. Right, which we'll get to, okay? So the first question right off the bat, just from the Mishnah, is when it says that Behil and Beit Shammai are krovim divrei elu, liyoti divrei elu, you got to figure out, what are they telling you? Are they telling you that they're close, meaning conceptually they're close, it's a quantitative machloket, but fundamentally they both think the same way, right? With a degree of difference, right? Like lahavdil, right? Lahavdil, let's take a politically charged issue, okay? If you have two people who say, we both think that there should be a minimum wage, which is a living wage, right? And one of them says, I think that's $14 an hour, and one of them says it's $15 an hour, right? Everyone looks at them and says, okay, they're both fundamentally, right, progressive, liberal, right? They're on the same spectrum. Okay, they're arguing, they're quibbling, right, about how much is a living wage, right? If someone says, I think there should be a minimum wage, and someone says, no, I am a 100% laissez-faire capitalist. Let the market determine everything. And if the minimum wage turns out to be $50, fine. And if it turns out to be 5 cents an hour, we should get rid of child labor laws. And we should get rid of, right? Let the market do its thing. Right? You would say, okay, that's, you know. And even if it turns out, that the laissez-faire capitalist who says leave the market forces to do what they want, if it turns out that in this city, right, the minimum wage turns out to be $14.50, right? No one would look at him and say, aha, he's basically the same as liberal progressive, right? Even though it's a 50-cent difference. Why? Because you look at him and you say, right, conceptually, they are mina kaseh la kaseh, right? They're as far as you could possibly get. It's just that it happens to be that in this area, right, because of the open, right, because of the free market, right, and the negotiating power of workers and employers, right, it turns out that the, on average, the minimum wage turns out to be $14.50, right? Exactly, right, that's exactly, and that's the question I think you have to ask in Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, right? So let's keep that in the back of our minds as we go in to figure out, okay, if we want, if we have these two models, they both agree to this MHP, and we don't know how different they are, well, now we need to say, okay, well, then what is Tosefta Shviyit, and where does it come from, right? If you want to figure out what you're arguing about, then you got to ask, what is this thing we call Tosefta Shviyit? Yes, Marlai. Unlikely. I'm three lines into a Mishnah. We're 18 minutes into the year. Do you really think that I think you're reading too much into it? Yeah? You got to understand. You make, when I was in Rosenzweig share, it took us a month to get past the psukim and all the conceptual questions we asked on the psukim, okay? So in my mind, I always know it can go slower, right? Okay.
Maybe the conceptual difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is that it seems like Beit Shammai is
hold it. Hold that thought. Right? But Mordechai already says, okay, wait a second. Let's try this. Right? He says, okay, maybe I have a first attempt, which is that Beit Shammai thinks that what is this thing called Tosefta Shviyit?
It's the beginning of the rest.
Oh, right? Is that what he is telling you is this is really when the land has to start resting, and that's why what you have to be focused on?
The land.
Very good, the land. Okay, and Beit Hillel says?
Shavuot.
And why Shavuot? Good, why?
Because when it comes to people were based on...
Okay, right, so he says maybe the difference is between whether we focus on the land or we focus on the people getting into the experience of Shemitah. Okay, so hold that thought, and let's see as we go through the sugya whether it bears itself out. Okay?
What is the reason is that it's according to Beit Shammai, you'd have to be going through the field and get every single tree, it'll be a different kind of tree. You're going to have to see this tree.
Good, so Josh says, oh, you're getting too conceptual, right? They both fundamentally agree, but the Hill says, really, you're going to be the person going through and trying to figure out fruit by fruit. I mean, come on, right? I mean, raise your hand. Maybe there's somebody here. How many of you could go through an orchard and figure out at what point you have to stop working it because it's no longer good for the fruit because the fruit is totally ready and it's good for the line? How many of you have any idea? Yes, I'm asking you. I just told you, my neighbor who's a botanist could do it. How about you?
Yeah, it's not talking about whether a random person is, you know. It's talking about if...
Okay, fine. I have a lemon tree in my backyard, right? Most of my neighbors have fruit trees in their backyards, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people in this world who have trees who aren't experts, right? Now, you're right. An expert might know. My neighbor does, right? In a hanami, but how... Do you know, look, you know how rabbis... Okay, you know how rabbis, Moshe, you know how rabbis like Pesach time, our phones, it feels like they're vibrating off the table, right? Starting about 4 weeks before Pesach or a week before Yom Kippur, you know? Because everyone, even though Pesach, everyone knows it's coming for some reason, right? Everyone has the same silence every year exactly at the same time, you know? Shlomo was laughing. Yeah. See, my normal rule in Toronto was, right, Shartina and Nicole said, we're not the shul rabbis, we don't paskin shilas for people. The one time we suspended that rule was before Pesach, because I knew that your father, any shilas that came to me that didn't go to him, he was happy for me to deal with it, because before Pesach is a puzzle. So that's how this botanist feels, right? You have the entire city, none of us know what to do. Aha, but it's Benjamin Wiesel, he's coming! And it's like, literally, I was like, what do I do? This is when he suddenly is in demand, right, for Shiloh, right? Not everyone can get the local botanist, right? You're right. It used to be more agricultural, so people presumably were bigger experts than they are now. In economy, but still, right? Not everybody is the same level expert. It's not so easy, right? Right? There are some fruits that their entire seed, I mean, you know, like, it's not easy. Okay.
Does Beit Shammai hold that the first tree is already... the entire field
can no. Right, that's even worse, right? It's like, oh, that tree, I mean, yeah, it's a pain in the neck to figure that out. Okay, good. So, now I ask you, okay, where's the seventh field come from? What is it? And now, I could have thrown you into the Rishami, but that really would have been mean. I did think about it. I really did. But I'm going to start you in the Bavli. I did, but it's not fair. It's not fair for me to do that. But here's the condition. I need you, when you read the Yerushalmi, to forget that you learned the Bavli. Okay? I need you to look at it and try, at least, to understand the Yerushalmi in its own terms. Okay? Try. If I give you the Yerushalmi, I wouldn't have to tell you to forget anything. You would look at it and be like, what are you talking about? Yes, well, in Malasa. Okay. So, the Gemara tells us, in the middle of the Sugin Moed Katan, right, because I told you to go out of order, which I still think is the easier conceptual way of doing it. But let's even if you didn't do that in Seder, but let's jump to it. So five lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet in Moed Katan. The Gemara tells you, it has been working on the assumption since the top of Gimel Amud Bet that Tosefet Shviit, whatever it is derived from Halakha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. What's Halakha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai? Or Hilchitza in this case? What is the Halakha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai? But it's not written in the Torah, right? It's a tradition. What is its status? Is it Del Raita? Is it Derabanan?
No.
Well, yes and no. Right? That's the problem. It's yes and no. Right? It is and it isn't. Right? It is and it isn't. It's daraita, but it's not daraita. If that was not confusing. But that's really where it is. Okay? So we'll try to see some of the differences. But the Gemara says, it's been working on the assumption that the Sefet Shviit is a halacha, the Moshe Mitzinai, Hilchet Aminu. And then what does the Gemara say? Five lines from the bottom. Bahani, Hilchet Aminu? Really? It's only halacha Moshe Mitzinai, which means that what? It has no psukim to back it up. But give me an example. Give me an example of halacha Moshe Mitzinai. It has zero psukim to back it up. It's just halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Zach, Ellie, you're being quiet. No, Chaim. Give me an example. What's halacha Moshe Mitzinai? Any? Yes.
I would say
Parashat Chukat. Parashat Chukat. Parashat Chukat. What about filling? Very good. Very good. Right? The surah of it, the fact that it's square, right? Very good. That is a paradigm, right? The existence of tefillin are in the psukim, but the fact that it is square and black, the Gemara tells us, halakha Moshe Mitzinai. Perfect. What?
I think the details of the tzitzit as well.
Which ones?
Not its existence, but like the specific.
Which ones? Okay, good. Think about it. What?
I think
no, the parashiyot are the two parashiyot that take mezuzah in it.
No. I'm saying the good parashiyot should be chosen from
the mezuzah. The parashiyot that are chosen from the mezuzah are the two parashiyot that say mezuzah in it. Right, Shema Vayim Shemoah. That's what I just said. But you're right that some of the halachot mezuzah are like kisidron. Right? The fact that mezuzah must be written in order. Right? It must be written in order. Right, unlike a Sefer Torah, but a mezuzah must be written in order, which is why, right, like a Sefer Torah, you can fit. Right, you know, there's a mistake, you go up there, there's an annoying moment, and they say, oh, Gavalt, there's a missing letter, right, you take it a new Sefer Torah, right? No, actually. Some of it, trefot, yes. Trefot, yes. Right, trefot, the 18 trefot are all of Moshe Mitzinah. Not most of Kashrut, most of Kashrut is Derabana. Look, rule in life, you will learn this one day. Right? The more you learn about kashrut, the more makil you become. Okay? This is a rule. Right? It's a rule. Because everything you know about kashrut is 17 levels of chumrah more than is required by Shulchan Aruch. Right? And the you know, there's a well-known story where, right, Soloveitchik's wife was there when his students were there and they were helping in the kitchen, like doing the dishes and, you know, whatever. And she came in and kicked them all out and said, stop tracing up my kitchen with your yoredeya, right? Right, if you actually know halacha, right, you will discover that kashrus, most of what you know is just not even true. It's just, right, it's very hard to trace anything up. It really is. Unless you're really trying.
It's a question of chemistry.
What?
It's
a question of chemistry. Yes, very good. Yes. The Gemara will tell us that soon in the Yerushalmi. Yeah, that is something also. Very good. So yes, most of Kashrus is not. Good morning, Rose Carr. How are you?
Doing well. Fresh off the boat. So American. You know
this? Did you take a boat?
I didn't take a
boat. So not off the boat. It's not a joke. You can take boats. My mother, when she moved in the 1960s from Israel to America, took a boat.
Well,
took a boat. Took 3 weeks.
I mean, you know, you always hear the stories of 2 weeks.
I did have a friend, though, who took a boat here when they came to Shana.
Is it like they wanted the choir to sell the sewage?
No, my mother's family was impoverished. Like,
they couldn't afford it.
I don't know. I wasn't there in 1960s, but fine. But I did have a friend who came on a boat when I didn't see them. It was one of my friend's wives who is mostly deaf, but if she goes on a plane, she'll lose all her hearing because of the pressure. So the only way to come for Shana Aleph was to take a boat. But I think it takes less than 3 weeks now. I think it's only a week now. What? Oh, yes, a little speedboat across the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah. Okay. You're fresh off the plane. The flying boat. The flying ohel. Okay. if you have like hearing. I don't know. Anyways, fine. Yalla. So the Gemara says, is it really halacha Moshe Mitzinai? Right? It's not. Crying inu. What does crying inu mean? There are psukim or a pasuk. They are relevant psukim. And if there's a pasuk, is it halacha Moshe Mitzinai?
No.
What is it? A daraita. Very good. Right? This is not a trick question. Right? If there is a pasuk in the Torah, then it is daraita. Right? And then it introduces the machloket. Between who? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael. Very good. And what is the machloket? The Gemara tells you, Titania. Ticharish uvakadir tishbo. What? You remember, who remembers that pasuk? Good. When do you remember it from? What is it talking about in context? Thank you. Shabbat. Remember? Remember we did this? Right? We did this at the beginning of the year. But look at number one. And I gave you, it's a copy of, this has the Torah or Hashalim, which has the whole pasuk on the side. So if you didn't remember, you could have looked it up, but never, ever, don't look up a pasuk, ever. Please never do that again. Right? Yeah, what did it say? Very good. 6 days a week you shall work, and on the seventh you shall rest. And you shall rest from what? Charish v'katir? No, what do the words mean? V'charish? Plowing and katir? Harvesting. Very good. You shall rest. So, what does Rabbi Akiva say? Ah, the pasuk said it's talking about Shabbat, the day? Forget it. No, it's not. That's a joke. Right, just kidding. Right, it's not talking about Shabbat. What is it talking about? Shemitah! And you'll tell me, why? How did he get from the words, Sheshet Yamim Ta'avot, you shall work for 6 days, Uvayom HaShvi'i Kishvot, is it here in the corner, see? Guys, on the Gemara, see? Pasuk over here, Torah Or HaShalim. Right? Uvacharitim Katir Kishvot. Pray tell, how did Rabbi Akiva come to the conclusion that a pasuk that's talking about Shabbat day is talking about Shemitah? What does he say? He tells you, by the way. Right? I'm not... He says. Then that's why I told you start there. Come on. Rabbi Akiva Omer. What did Rabbi Akiva say? Ein tzarech omer charish v'katir shel shvi'it. Right, so first of all, he doesn't really tell you. He takes it as a given that it's about Shemitah, right? And he says, it can't be prohibiting plowing and harvesting during Shemitah. Why not? Shvarei kvar nemar said chalok tizrave karma chalok tizmor. Because the pasuk already tells you, don't plow and harvest during Shemitah. Now we'll see why he doesn't think it's about Shabbat in a minute.
Wait,
Ella.
It's not.
Yeah. Good, very good. We'll have to figure this out, right? But he says, it already says you can't plant, so from there you know you can't plow. And it says that you can't prune, so apparently that says you can't harvest or something, right? Yes, it's very complicated. It's very complicated. So he says, but the point is, and we'll drill down into Rabbi Akiva in just a minute. So he says, listen, I'm taking it as a given that this pasuk is about Shemitah, not Shabbat, and you don't have to tell me that the prohibitions apply during Shemitah because we already know that they do, and therefore, Ela Harish ke Ela Shvi'it she Nichnas la Shvi'it. What is being prohibited here? Harvesting. But I want you to be very careful. Read these words with me. Read it again. Let's read it very carefully. What is it? Harish shel eretz shvi'it shenichnas l'shvi'it. What do those words mean?
Plowing
the sixth year. Well, no. Plowing in the year before the seventh year. I want you to be very careful in the words. That will go into the seventh year.
So I started it like 2 days before.
Good. So we don't know how long. But what is that suggestive of? Someone tell me, is there something suggestive about that phrase? Ellie's already picking up on it. Yeah, Ellie, yeah. Yeah, well, what is it suggestive? Saying that very, right, meaning One second. Okay, let me pose the question more sharply. Right? If he had said, don't plow in your sticks, right? So that would have been a factually true statement. But he didn't say that. He said, don't plant in the year before the seventh, such that it enters the seventh. Right? Now, you could either just say he didn't know how to speak. Right? 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 Or you could say that he said that on purpose. Right? And that there's something suggestive. Good. Ellie, what is it suggestive of? I mean, what does it sound like? What is that phrasing telling? Very good. So, very good. So Ellie says, when you call something Erev something, right? Right? You don't call it the sixth. You call it the day before the seventh, right? Right? That's like the difference between, he's correct, right? It's like the difference between the world called Friday, Friday, right? And we call it Erev Shabbos. Why? Because everybody knows. Friday isn't just Friday, right? It's not that Friday happens to precede Shabbos, but there's a stress that is attached to that, right? Everybody knows that the most stressful time of the week, right, is 1 hour before whenever sunset is, right, on a Friday afternoon, right? Because it's not Friday, it's Erev Shabbos, right? It's somehow attached to Shabbos, right? When you call it Erev Shvi'it, what are you suggesting? You're suggesting that the reason there's a prohibition is because some way, something about Shemitah is already being set in motion before Shemitah. It's not that it's year six and year six is prohibitions. It's that year six at some point transforms into Erev Shvi'it, right? So that's one implication you might pick up. Very good. What else? That's from the first part, Erev Shvi'it, but then what else do you have? What is Shenichnas L'Shvi'it? What does that word start to, right, that enters Shemitah? So Ellie said something else before. Shenichnas L'Shvi'it. What else might you think those words tell you? Clarify what you're saying. What do you mean it only takes effect? He's prohibiting before it takes, before the sixth.
Yeah, but what you're
doing
is doing anything
good. Oh. Right, so Josh says, wait a second. Erev Shvi'it, Shenichnas L'Shvi'it. What does that mean? Maybe it means that why is it prohibited? Not because it's year six. And not just because Shmit, right, things start getting set in motion, but because what? Shenichnas L'Shvi'it means that why is it us are in year six? Not just because we start the prohibitions early, but because. Come on, clarify it. You could also participate. I know you're visiting. What?
Well, it's like a natural assessment.
Because?
Since it actually happened in the seventh.
Very good. Right? Meaning, wait a second. Maybe the reason things start being broken in the sixth is because you're setting in motion a process that's fundamentally going to take place in the seventh. It's not just that we extend the prohibitions. We extend the prohibitions. Why? Because.
It's
actually going to take place, right, during Shemitah, right? You're doing something that you're doing in action now, but it's actually, right, its effects are going to be seen. The process you started is going to take place in Shvi'it, right? The Katsir Shal Shvi'it, Shal Yatsa L'Motai Shvi'it, and you can't. Now, this is even clearer on the other end, because he says, what else is prohibited? Harvesting, but how does he phrase it? Does he say katsir shel shmini? No, what does he say? He's literally harvesting that which grew during Shemitah, after Shemitah, right? Katsir shel shmini, yatsa l'motai shvi, not yatsa l'shmini, right? Very good. Different, sorry, less work.
Oh, different than the
correct, very good.
Because that was actually...
Look at Kobe. Kobe doesn't even realize it, but Kobe is Rabbeinu Tam incarnate. He doesn't even know that. I told you I was staying off the Rishonim, but he didn't know. He didn't know that he's wading into a machloket between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rosh Mishnah, which is amongst the two heaviest hitters in the Balei HaTosfot, right? Of the top three Balei HaTosfot, you have just waded into a machloket of two of them. But he didn't know that, yes, exactly, that Rabbeinu Tam, see, this is why I said, we're not going to look at the Rishonim until we read the Gemara really, really carefully. We're not going to get the Rishonim for quite a while, and I'm not going to make you read them all inside, right? I want you to think, I remember, as one of my Rebbeim once said, right, your goal when you're learning Gemara is to have read it and thought about it so carefully that you know in advance almost every position that will be articulated by the Rishonim and the Acharonim. You don't have to know who's going to say what, right? But if you think carefully enough, you should be able to predict it. Very good. Kobe says, well, wait a second. That's cheating, right? Those don't sound like the same thing, right? I mean, sure. But one of those is very different, right? Saying it's prohibited to prepare the ground for Shemitah is different from saying that you can't simply take advantage of that which actually do during Shemitah. Those are two different conceptual models. Very good. And Rabbi Tam is going to say exactly what he says, which is that the entire analysis that we're going to do from now until the end, don't let the Gemara trick you. It's only about half of the discussion. It's only about Tosefet Shviit going into Shemitah. But in fact, there are two different conceptual models working, even though they are constantly treated together, right? Lo and behold, there's actually two conceptual models, one of them about year 6 going into year 7. It's a totally different year, one of 8 which came out of 7. Very good. Good. So as we'll see, Kobe is going to be correct. And Rabbeinu Tam, very good. And not in Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfot. In order to know this Rabbeinu Tam, you have to have read Sefer HaYashar, which is Rabbeinu Tam's Sefer, which is not written on the Daf. Yeah, very good. Okay, good. Good. I'm very glad you got that. Very good. What? Oh, and Josh is siding with the Rosh Mishnah, which is Mapitam. Why would you distinguish between this? There's a very good reason to treat your 8 like your 7. Oh, okay, very good. Very good. So Josh is on the side of the Rosh Mishnah, and Kobe is on the side of the Rain of Dom. Yalla. Okay, we'll see. We'll see what they say. But yes, you are, on the one hand, Rabbeinu Tam says they must be different, and Josh says, why should they be different? Yeah, very good. Very good. Good. I'm glad you got that. Oh, now you're flipping. Okay, fine. Yeah. Yes, we'll get there. Yes, exactly. But you're right. I mean, the key point here is that you might have to distinguish, right? That as much as the Gemara is treating them together, there might be good reason to distinguish Bein Lechula Bein Lechumra between 6 going into 7 and 8 coming out of 7. 100%. 100%. Very good. So let's just get the second position out, right? Yes. Okay, go for it.
I have a hot take.
Okay, a hot take.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Fine. You are playing devil's advocate. You're not putting your name behind it. You're raising a possibility.
That's fine. That's the best way.
That's fine. I'm fine with that. Look, I remember I was once in shir. Rav Lichtenstein was also like this. He would start shir and get all the possibilities out. And there was someone who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham who had just started in yeshiva at the time. He transferred in. And he said, how can you say that? The Gemara is going to say the opposite. Right? And he said, but we could only have the Mishnah. And he said, and Rav Aaron said, yeah, but that didn't mean it isn't a possibility, right? I mean, the Gemara is taking a stance, right? It could be that the possibility we raise is not true, but the fact that it's a possibility means that when the Gemara said the opposite, it's taking a stand. You have to articulate the possibilities to know the path's not taken, or you won't understand the path that were taken. It doesn't work, right? You can't just say it, right? Good. So Mordechai, I'm not making you take a stand, but what's a possibility, okay? There's no...
So according to Rabbeinu Tam, if you plant in the 6th year...
Oh, God, you're already going on Rabbeinu Tam. You don't fully know what Rabbeinu Tam says. You just know that I...
From what I've understood of Rabbeinu Tam...
By the way, reminder, what's his name? What's Rabbeinu Tam's actual name? His parents did not name him Tam. Right? What was his name?
I mean, Tom is a real name. So.
What is his name? What do you think his name is? Yaakov. His name is Yaakov. Why is his name Yaakov?
Yaakov is Tom.
Thank you! Yaakov is Tom. Your kid all the time. The Bali says a nickname for people named Yaakov. Very good. What?
I think Tom is a name.
It's a nickname. He wasn't the only one. Many Yaakovs in the Bali Atos were all called Rabbeinu Tam. He's not even the only one. Rabbi Yaakov of Marvej was also sometimes called Rabbeinu Tam of Marvej. Right? What? Very good. I once had a paper in graduate school on that exact question. And the answer is, often we don't, and it's very confusing. And usually, but here's usually the answer. If it sounds weird and mystical, it's the other one. Because Rabbeinu Tam of Marvej, Rabbeinu Yaakov of Marvej, his primary sefer was Shu'ot Min HaShamayim, which is literally a collection of shuvot in which he said he would fast, write down his shaila on a piece of paper, put it under his pillow, and a malach would come to him in his sleep and answer it, and he wrote it down and published a tshuva sefer, and called Shu'ot Min HaShamayim. That's Rabbeinu Tam of Marvej. Our Rabbeinu Tam doesn't usually do that, except in one particular case, which is what I wrote my graduate paper on, which is, I think it went the other way, where Rabbeinu Tam was engaged in mysticism, based on all the evidence that we have, and people confused it in the opposite direction. But that's fun for another time. Yes. If you ever come to my house, you will discover that all my kids except for one are all named for Bali Atosot, including my daughters, right? We like the Bali Atosot in my house. Slash, before we had our first son, my wife decided we were naming all of our kids for her favorite Bali Atosot, which I thought was a joke until she said the same thing after she gave birth. And was like, no, I'm dead serious about this. Yeah, this is why my oldest is named from Morami Rutenberg, Mayer, and then Aaron was, because Aaron had just passed away, and he was my, Rebbe Mubak, so whatever. But yeah, the rest of my kids are named for Bali Atosot. And my twins, right, Shemima, is named for Rebbeinu Tam, right? Since it was his nickname, I felt I could play with it, right? Ayala is named for the Reed, right, which was also a play, right, because why was it a play? What was it a play on? Ayala is named for the Re. Why would that be true? See if you can figure this one out. But what's the Re's first name?
Ali.
The Re. Reish Yud. Rabbi Yud. What's the Yud? What?
Yitzhak.
Yitzhak. Yitzhak.
Oh,
right. What? Ayala. He was traded for an Ayal, right? The Akedah, right? Yeah.
Okay. I'm just like,
that's fine. Okay, anyways, but yes. So, what do you want to say in Rabbeinu Tam's? You haven't seen him yet.
I'm having a weird...
Fine. Within the possibility that there's a distinction between Tosefet Shvi'it before and after, fine, yes. Now,
maybe there could be an idea of like when three practically takes effect. So when you plant it in the sixth year, it would be considered, according to the other guy, the one who argued with the same time.
According to the one who doesn't distinguish for now, yeah, with the Rosh Hashanah, yeah.
It would be considered Shemitah fruit, because practically it's fruit. It takes back their Shemitah.
Right, so we'll see. That's going to be part of the discussion, yeah.
So maybe by the end of Shemitah, fruit that started in Shemitah, maybe you should be able to pick that after once it goes to the eighth year, because practically it didn't take back those fruits.
We'll see. Right, that may be true. Right, it might have to do Shvi'it, but might not have the limitations of Ketira, right? Very good. Okay. Well, but we'll see. Fine. That's Rabbi Akiva. What about Rabbi Ishmael? Rabbi Akiva thinks it's from a pasuk, right? Let's read Rabbi Ishmael. We'll go back to Rabbi Akiva. What did Rabbi Ishmael say? Who got to Rabbi Ishmael? Rabbi Ishmael Omer. Rabbi Ishmael says, no. The psukim are not about Shvi'it. What are they about? Shabbat. Why does he say they're about Shabbat? Crazy idea.
That's
what the pasuk says. I know, it's crazy. Right? Sometimes the answer is simple. Right? Why does he think it's about Shabbat? Because that's what it says. Why does Rabbi Akiva not want to read about Shabbat? Why do you think he didn't want to read about Shabbat?
Because
we already know. Because there's already an Isra Malacha. So if you want to say it's about Shabbat, what do you need to explain? Like, what's it teaching? What's it adding to the fact that we already know Malach HaZasar? What's the Rishmol's answer to that question? Macharish Yeshud Af Katsir Rishud. That on Shabbat, the only type of plowing and harvesting that's usher is non-mitzvah agricultural activity. But if the agricultural activity is a mitzvah, then it's mutter even on Shabbat. Yatsa Katsir HaOmer, there's only one exception. It's all the same thing, one exception. Fine. Yatsa Katsir HaOmer, Shehi Mitzvah. What's the exception? The harvesting of the Omer. What's the Omer? Which is brought when? Which is brought on what day of Pesach? The second day of Pesach, when is it harvested? At night, on the 16th, right? After the first day of Pesach, right? Going into the 16th of Pesach. If that's Shabbat, Rabbi Ishmael says, you're allowed to harvest at night on Shabbat. So Friday night, if Pesach starts Thursday night, Rabbi Ishmael says, and Friday night, you're allowed to harvest the barley to bring the Karban Omer on Shabbat morning, the 16th of
Nisan.
I
took him when he was teaching, but then usually, or did he say that we learned this topic?
Often they are mutually exclusive, and sometimes they're not. Yeah. Maybe, but you'd have to think of one. It'd be a challenge.
Where does he know that?
Yes, and you got to figure out whether he actually thinks of the case. But we'll hold it for a second, okay? So let's just stop here for a second. So now we have, right? So the reason I wanted you to go here first is because the Gemara now introduces the. Remember, it's amazing. Does the Mishnah tell us why it's ushered, why there's a prohibition in Tosefta Shviit? No, it just assumes that there is. Right? If you want to figure out why there is, you've got to go and you've got to figure out the source. And what do we have? We have two possibilities. In the Bavli, keep this in mind, because Yerushalmi is not going to be so simple. In the Bavli, we have two possibilities. Rabbi Ishmael says, Rabbi Kiva says, what is the source for Tosefta Shviit? The Pasuk. That he takes the Pasuk that's about Shabbat, says Bacharisha Bekatir Tishbo, but all types of fancy moves. He says, first of all, it's about Shabbat. No, it's not. It's about Shemitah. It's about Shemitah, but we already know you can't plow during Shemitah. Therefore, what does he derive?
It's kind of planting before.
Planting before that enters and
harvesting.
Basic, 100%. And then Rabbi Ishmael says, no, it's really about Shabbat.
So Rabbi Ishmael is
good. So then according to Rabbi Ishmael, what is the source for Tosefta Shviit? If it's not the Psukim, so what did the Gemara already tell us? What? It's Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Very good. Right? So if you continue on, the Gemara says, Elamar of Nachman Rav Yitzchak, Ki Gemire Hilchita, right? It is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, but L'Mishre Yilada, Kroy L'Meser Zkena. So the Gemara tries to say, well, maybe the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai forbids those trees, the young plants that cannot be worked on leading up to Shemitah, and the halacha comes and permits the young trees which you can work on, which again we'll come back to. Sorry, other way around. The Mishra allowed to permit the young ones and forbid the old ones. The Chayvin the Elchadol Mishra allowed to love and Melach. Right? The Gemara says that doesn't make sense, right? If you have a halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai that forbids working on old trees, established trees, then you know by implication that what? Young trees don't have these prohibitions, right? So therefore, don't tell me that the halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai comes to forbid and the pasuk comes to permit, because they come together. So then what is the answer? Ela hilchita l'Rabbi Ishmael, cry the Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara then tells you, you're right. What is the conclusion? According to Rabbi Ishmael, the status is halacha l'moshe mi-sinai, and how many psukim are necessary to learn the halacha or help us shed light on the halacha?
Zero.
Very good. And according to Rabbi Akiva, it is a bizarre limud from a pasuk that seems to be about Shabbat, which it seems to be about plowing on Shabbat, and he says, no, it's about plowing before Shemitah. Two exegetical jumps. Right? It's not about Shabbat, it's about Shemitah. It's not about Shemitah, it's about before and after Shemitah. Yay! Very good. It can. It's not. Don't worry, you show me well. Yay! Well, it might. That's not true. It doesn't say Asmachta. It says Asmachin Hu Akra, which, not surprisingly, there's going to be a machloket whether it means Asmachta or it means Daraita, or neither. But just wait! Yeah. I know. Isn't it fun? The Yerushalmi is going to make life even harder. Oh, no. It really is a fun Yerushalmi, but it will like, fit them in the pretzel. That's fine. Fine. Did you want me to throw you into the Yerushalmi?
Which is only 13th.
If you want, we can switch right now. You can go read the Yerushalmi, but it's going to be harder. Okay? Fine. So what do we have? So now let me ask you, okay? So we know the sources. According to Bishmael, it's a halakha Moshe Mitzinai. According to Bishmael, it's a pasuk. Now, if I just froze here, what question do you have to ask yourself? What questions do you have? Okay, we have different sources. Now what? Very good. What difference, or does it make a difference at all? Because now, what could you say? We have different sources, but now what? Now what? What do? I have different sources, so what? What possibilities do I have in front of me? What could I say? Oh, so one possibility is that they have different sources, and the different sources indicate that they have different conceptual models for it. But just like we have to be able to examine it, but what else? It could be there's a different source for the exact same thing. Right? It could be a different source for the exact same thing. Right? 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 This is always tricky, right? They have different sources, but that doesn't mean that they have different conceptualizations. It might just be different sources. Right? 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 So for example, right? Let's say you have two people, okay? And both of them are not eating, I don't know, deep-fried french fries, okay? Right? And you ask them, why aren't you having the french fries, okay? So one of them says, because my nutritionist said that it's not healthy. And the other one says, because I looked online and it says that french fries aren't healthy. So they have different sources. Are they saying the same thing? Yes. Right? If one of them says, I'm allergic to potatoes, right, then it's different. Right? Meaning, you can have cases where you have different sources, but they're fundamentally saying the same thing. Right? You have cases where, right, it's not. Right? And of course, in that example, you could have two people have the same source and still have different rationales. Right? So they could both go to the same nutritionist, and one would say it's not healthy, and the other one would say, no, you're allergic. That'll be fine. Yeah, I could confuse myself. Don't get too caught up in the example. But, right, but the point is that, yeah, when you have two sources, you always have to ask, okay, is it just that they have different sources, but fundamentally they think similarly about the prohibitions? They just derive from different places. Or does the fact that they derive from different places indicate that they have different models? Okay, so now, so far, we've just been talking about structurally, the type of question you have to ask. But in the few minutes we have left, you want to throw out possibilities? Okay, if there were a difference, what difference might it be? I don't know. I haven't told you yet. I don't know. But why would you say that? Very good. But Josh already says, maybe Rabbi Kiva hits with the Beit Shammai. Why? What do you think?
He says it depends on the picture for the 7th year.
Okay. So Josh says, because wait a second, there's a certain linguistic similarity between Beit Shammai and Rabbi Kiva, which is they both emphasize what?
Working.
They were, right? They focus on the agricultural reality. They say, the problem is Yafel Priya for the Karka. Doesn't that sort of sound like saying that the problem is that it's Shishit and Nasla Shvi'i? They're focusing on the way the agriculture starts preparing, and they're saying, very good. What are you really saying about Tosefet Shvi'i? According to what you understand, both Beit Shammai and Rabbi Kiva, what are you really saying?
Well,
Why? What is the nature of Tosefet Shviyah? What are you suggesting? Meaning, wait, or slightly differently, but what are you saying? You've like less sharpened it, right? You've unsharpened it, right? But what are you saying? Now, what is the nature of the Yitzer?
On the field.
To do what in the field? It's on the field.
It's not
what?
Not
meaning
not
that the problem is, right, that the nature of the Yitzer is to prepare the field agriculturally for Shemitah. That's the prohibition. The prohibition of Tosefet Shviyah is, Shemitah is coming up, you can't set in motion, you can't prepare for Shemitah agriculturally. Right? Because in what way can you say you're resting in Shemitah if all you did was, right, make sure that everything would happen in advance? Right? In the Lamdanim, what you'll see is one model that will, is that they said, aha, you know what? The Isser of Tosefet Shviyah, it's an Isser Hachana. It's a prohibition to prepare for Shemitah. That's why their language focuses on Shishit and Ichnas Lashvi'i, Pri versus Karka. Their focus is, what their focus is the, it's not just descriptive, right? But it's pointing you to the conceptualization. That the reason it's usher is because it's forbidden to prepare for Shemitah agriculturally. That's not just the descriptive prohibition, that is the nature of the prohibition itself. Good.
I don't know.
Before you push back, right? Before you push back, right? I just want to throw out the following question. Okay. Does Rabbi Shmuel's language, Behilchot Haninim, or Behil's language, does that necessarily? No. So if it's not that, what might it be? And then I'll take your comment. What might it be? Let's start pushing you.
It might be that actually working the language is difficult.
Meaning?
The only problem, like,
well, what do you mean? What do you mean? You're saying something very good, I think. But say it again.
Like, it's not making sure that the world doesn't happen on the pizza. It's just on. It's just like, you shouldn't do something work for the land.
Yeah, but why did it start early? Yeah. Okay, so you want to go in a zero direction. It's not that you're preparing it, it's that you're going to end up, okay, maybe, right? But what else? What are you saying?
Because if you know, and doing the actions...
Come on.
Planting right before Shemitah is de facto making yourself work on Shemitah.
What did Josh said? You're saying, oh, you're working during Shemitah, you're preparing your... okay, come on. Say something different. You're all saying nuances of what Josh said, but say something different. If it's not that, what might it be? If it's not that, if it's not hachana, if it's not in the prohibition, I put it on the I'm going to finish in 1 minute. Right? If it's not that, what might it be? And if you don't have it, then I'm just going to leave the question hanging. But, right? What else might it be? Ellie, okay. I was going to go back to something you said, but you have a suggestion to go. Go. What? Oh, okay, good. It's prohibition itself. Why? Very good. Is there an Isser Atzmai, an independent prohibition. Why? Because what? Very good. Because?
I mean, like an extension to the 6 years.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Very good. Yosef is 100% right. And the other possibility, wait a second, no, that's not what this is. I get it. Yosef, right? Good. Right? Is that maybe it's not an Isser Hachana. What is it? It's an extension of Shemitah, right? It's not telling you that you can't prepare for Shemitah. It's telling you Shemitah starts early, and that's why you can't work, right? Have any of you ever made early Shabbat, right? Why, when you make early Shabbat, do you stop doing malacha? Is it because you're preparing for Shabbat? No, but once you do, right? Once you do make early Shabbat, we'll see whether you're forced to. That's the Sugyan Rosh Hashanah, right? Hold that. You might be forced to, right? But why don't you work? Why don't you do malacha when you made early Shabbat? Is it because you're preparing for Shabbat? Because you made Shabbat early, right? And this, as we will see throughout the sugya, this, in all the lamdanim, is a fundamental way they frame this question. Very good. I'm glad you got there, right? Was that, do we conceptualize Tosefet Shviyah that really Shemitah starts in year 7, but there's an Isser to prepare for Shemitah? Or is the Chiddush of Tosefet Shviyah that Shemitah isn't just the seventh year, that's a misnomer. It's the seventh year and a little bit of time before and a little bit of time after. Right? That Shemitah itself is extended. Right? The time, the Kedusha, what? Oh, good. And here's where we're going to pause. But that obviously asks the question, which is, why would you do that? What is the nature of that extension? Why would it? And guess what? Why do you think that there is a blot in Moed Katan? And guess what? I give you Rosh Hashanah, which is just going to add more to it, because what is the Sugi in Rosh Hashanah? The Sugi in Rosh Hashanah brings up the Sefet Shvi'it in what context? So Sefet Shabbat. So Sefet Yom HaKippurit. So Sefet Yom Tov. Right? Where, what do we call it there? And I will start foreshadowing. But what do we call Tosefet there? Umosifin michol ala kodesh minayim. From where do we know that you add holiness to the mundane? Right? Oh! Yeah. There's good reason to believe that there might be something else going on. Why we do it? That's why there's another sugya. Very good. Very good. So this is the main model. Now, as we will see, some people are going to work only within one model, right? And they're going to try to explain the entire sugya from one perspective. But certain people, like Rav Moshe Feinstein, very long tshuva, that I don't think we're going to read the whole thing, right? But Rav Moshe Feinstein argues, no. This is part of the Machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, right? This is part of the Machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. That they're, it's not just that they're arguing about the source. They're arguing about the nature, right, along these lines, okay? Tomorrow we'll continue. We'll try. This was the key parts of the Bavli. We're going to read the whole Amud, right, and a half, right, whatever, right? We're going to read it, and I want you to be very, very careful. But today it was more about reading the questions, right, starting to get the basic conceptual model down, right, and we will plug them in. And like I said, how much of the Rishonim we read inside is not my problem, right? I will mention them to you. I will tell you when, in the case of Kobe, you are machaving to the Rishonim, right, or the Acharonim in this case, right? But if I make you read all of them, we'll never get at it. What I want you to do is see it in the sugya yourself. Good. Good. We'll see you tomorrow. Well, we'll see when we get to Rosh Hashanah. We have to finish Moed Katan, but you'll see when we get to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. Shkoyach, guys. Well.